Tom McCall at one point was brilliant. Mm-hmm. Not what he ran against us, but during mm-hmm. the early years, I worked very closely. Vic and I worked closely together from the very beginning, and he was also the minority leader in the Senate. Same time mm-hmm. I was minority in the House.
Then yeah.
1978, we both got ambitious, and McCall decided to hop in, and we had went through that. But yeah. I can tell you honestly, never during all that period, and especially afterwards, did we ever not keep our friendship up.
Yeah.
We were
yeah.
rivals for 3-4 months in the spring of 1978.
Yeah.
After that, I was on his team all the way.
Wonderful. So when did you first meet him? Was it when you were elected, yeah. or did you know him before?
I met Vic in the early 1960s, and I went to Salem to testify against what I thought was a horrible idea. It was called an inventory tax, mm-hmm. long ago repealed. Mm-hmm. But they literally would come in here on December 31st and tax the entire inventory of that store,
mm-hmm.
which led people to do everything in the world to avoid right. having big inventory. It was just ridiculous. Yeah. And I came down to testify, and in the middle of that, I met Vic. I also met Tony Uturi, and especially, I can't remember, Democratic State Senator who was chairman of the Revenue Committee at the time. And they were trying to gin up a sales tax,
mm-hmm.
not Vic. Mm-hmm. Never did care for sales tax. Mm-hmm. But Uturi and the other people there, yeah. I was too naive to understand what they were doing. So they listened to me a little bit and said, well, would you be in favor of a sales tax instead of an inventory mm-hmm. tax? Well, you know, I wasn't ready to answer that. But I met Vic, and he said it to me afterwards. He says, I'm sorry they put you through that. You didn't quite understand what's going on. That was my first introduction. Then, after I got elected, I ran in 1962 and in 64, losing, and had a brief association with him as candidates. I wasn't in the same area. He was Washington
yeah.
County. I was Clackamas.
Yeah.
But we'd go to schools for candidates right. and stuff. I knew
yeah.
him that way. But I didn't really get to know him until I got elected in 1967, mm-hmm. 66 election. In the 67 session,
mm-hmm.
I was 32 years old. A know-it-all who didn't know at all,
mm-hmm.
Needed a lot of schooling, but I was adopted by a clique of unbelievably talented lobbyists and legislators
mm-hmm.
who did a lot of social activities together, and I was brought in as the, I guess, the rookie that year.
Yeah.
So I got to play pitch and drink mm-hmm. and have dinner with these guys endless nights
mm-hmm.
when I realized I was schooled. I learned
yeah.
what was going on. And there was nothing evil about it. It's pretty well died out because of all the ethics laws now
mm-hmm.
and the entertainment and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that it was probably healthier than today.
Yeah.
But that's never going to change.
Yeah.
There was a great camaraderie. It was bipartisan.
Mm-hmm.
And Vic and I got going together. And then in 1969, when McCall gets elected,
mm-hmm.
and he got elected in 66.
Yeah.
When by 69, I'm in a position of some leadership. I was the first guy to support Bob Smith for
mm-hmm.
speaker.
Mm-hmm.
He gets elected, and he makes me the liaison with the governor's office, with McCall's office.
Mm-hmm.
Vic was doing a similar thing from the House, from the Senate side.
Right.
So we sat down and worked with the genius of all time, Ed Westerdahl,
mm-hmm.
and very involved in the total change in executive branch of state government,
mm-hmm.
which McCall never gets the credit for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's ridiculous. It's the bottle bill and the beach bill and land
right.
use. Those are the only things
right.
he ever did.
Right.
But what he really did was get rid of the Board of Control and totally change how the executive branch of state government ran.
Mm-hmm.
And Vic and I were involved in all of that.
Mm-hmm.
When Nixon gets elected, that was it. Nixon gets elected in 1968. Was it 68?
Yeah.
He gets elected, and Westerdahl comes up with the idea, let's go back to Washington, D.C. the first week in January.
Mm-hmm.
Just as soon as they're there, you know, before the inauguration, the new people
mm-hmm.
coming in, or maybe it was February, but it was
mm-hmm.
right at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And let's go meet the key Secretary of Interior, Secretary of Transportation, that Oregon
yeah.
has to deal with.
Yeah.
And we went in, we were the first people to ever go in Wally Hickel's office, the Secretary of Interior.
Wow.
Learned what kind of a buffoon he really was.
Uh-huh.
But we were there, I can remember, and Vic, it was Vic and I, Rich Kennedy, And I can't remember who the other Democrat was. Somebody, Senate Democrat, but because he wanted it bipartisan, Western Alderman.
Yeah.
And Vic and I spent a lot of time together. One Sunday, I'm Catholic, he's a high Episcopal. So we went to the National Cathedral, which is Episcopal. And I'm sitting there answering all of the responses, because the Catholic Church and the high Episcopal are almost identical, except for they say the Our Father differently.
Right.
And Vic looked at me and says, "How do you know all this?" And I said, "Vic, I'm an altar boy. I grew up as a Catholic. I know all these."
Right.
"Oh, okay."
Yeah.
So we drank together. And Vic was never a big drinker. I'll tell you a story a little bit about the one time that cured him from drinking. Three or four times, trips back to Washington during that era on behalf of the legislature and in conjunction with the governor's office.
Did you see him at that point really paying attention to how the governor's office was working and buying into the reforms? Or
no,
was he more the Senate side?
I think he was more being a legislator.
Uh-huh.
He was really into the issues. He was always a serious kind of guy and serious about getting things done. We just happened to, I think, had very similar views. I mean, I was portrayed as some kind of a conservative. I was never that. Vic was always a little more conservative. As an example, and I regret it now, I was big enthusiastic about Metro, creation of Metro, giving them land use planning, not giving them the land use planning, but some other things. Vic was always suspicious of Metro, which I now am, because of how impossible it is to work with and get anything done. Vic was considered to be really parochial when it came to Washington County. He was always very protective of everything had to do with Washington County. And I guess, like any logical legislator from the other two counties, you're always suspicious of what Multnomah County and especially what Portland's doing. And that's the era when Goldschmidt first shows up on the scene as a city commissioner and influences almost everything that's happened in the last 10 years.
You're elected, and then after the 1970 census, you go from kind of multiple level county districts
to single member.
Yeah. What was the difference that you saw between those?
Well, it was tremendous for me because it limited. I suddenly became the state representative for Lake Oswego and Milwaukee. My district was across the river. Lake Oswego was by far the biggest, and at that time it had a Republican majority, so it was considered kind of a safe seat. All of those things have changed. And I don't know that Vic changed very much. Clackamas County is very different than Washington County. There's always been a split. I mean, for a long time, and we might as well have been our own county in Lake Oswego area, because the rest of the county commission was all dominated by people across the river. Screw Lake Oswego. We had virtually no sheriff attention in the surrounding outside the city areas. The only time you ever saw a sheriff over here was when he was serving some papers of some kind. A little of that's changed. Well, go ahead.
One thing that Vic notes, I mean, he loved the old system. He thought the new system made it so that, he started getting meaner letters from people. Because they were his, you know, he was theirs. But also, he lost the ability to represent the dairy farmers. You know, he was just representing his small
suburban place. I was always able to keep in mind, I mean, when I ran, I was somewhat popular, and I won a couple counties in Eastern Oregon, so because I had paid attention. My people, my mother grew up in Lapine, Oregon, and so I had a feel for Eastern Oregon. I've always had.
I'll be driving through there a week from tomorrow.
Oh, you are? Okay. All right. And the legislators from Eastern Oregon were always very popular with Vic and me because they are not ultra-conservative. They're fiscally conservative. They're not religiously wacko like Krupp and some other people down the Long Valley. They're quite modern. For a long time, they were pro-choice. Many of them were. So you could work with them. And they they are a higher cut of individuals because you don't get elected in Pendleton or Burns without people knowing who in the hell you are.
Right.
You are known in that community. Over here, you can disguise yourself as something else.
Yeah.
Go ask anybody who their representative is. They don't have any idea.
Yeah. I grew up in Southern Oregon, and it's just was an amazing thing to come up here, and nobody knows who their county commissioner is. Nobody knows who their state legislator is. It's like,
where did you grow up?
In Medford.
In Medford, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I served with some of the great guy, Jim Redden.
Yeah.
He's a very close friend.
Yeah.
Still is, although he's goofy now. Lynn Newbery was just a giant. Hank Hart was a very good friend of mine.
Yep.
I had a few fun. Hank loses to a guy that didn't really know who he was.
Yeah.
A Democrat, and that after it was the Nixon debacle that led to the defeat of some of those people.
Yeah. So talk about the big early 1970s things, the bottle bill, the beach bill, land use. Was Vic in the middle of any of that? The impression I get is he was, I mean, he was thinking about things, but he wasn't in the center of the conversation.
He wasn't. He wasn't in the center of it because the bottle, I'll just use the bottle bill as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Bottle bill originates in the House in 1969. Paul Hanneman introduces it. And a lot of people claim they're responsible for him introducing it. Paul has told me he was a cop down there, a state cop, who was doing the fish and wildlife stuff and was sick and tired of all the trash along the Trask or the Wilson and the Tillamook Rivers. And kept saying, why the hell don't we go back to the old days when there was a deposit? And he introduced the bill. We heard it in the House, and it was popular enough that it came out of the committee. And we were trying to write a bill that solved some of the problems, the problems that still exist.
Yeah.
The requirement that this place takes your garbage back and handles it for no profit.
Yeah.
And maybe if you happen to be near the Columbia River, you have a store out on you know, on Jansen Beach. You take a whole bunch of bottles from Washington too that never had a deposit, so you lose money.
Right.
We're trying to work those details out.
Yeah.
It comes out of committee, goes to the floor of the House. There's a debate, and I made the motion to send it back to committee and killed it. This is 69. And I made the promise at the time, we're going to give the, quote, industry the time to try to work out some solutions to this problem, or we will bring it back. And I got very much involved. I went to the National Glass Institute or something like that at the time. Pebble Beach at a convention. I'm the keynote speaker, and I took two tapes with me. I took a tape of me saying that on the floor, solve the problem or you get the bill. And I took a tape of Tom McCall damning everybody for not passing it and said, you got to believe it. If you don't have a solution, it's coming back. And in 71, it did. It passed the House easily. There were six no votes, one of which was Bob Smith, the speaker, which is a tribute to Bob Smith for allowing the process to work even though he disagreed with it. It wouldn't happen today. The speaker killed it. He let it go. Then it went over to the Senate where it really got all balled up. Vic supported it. The problem were some evil out-of-state lobbyists came in. A guy from National Can Company had a roll of $50 bills in his pocket with a rubber band around it and was trying to take them out and give them to people. And Betty Roberts got approached that way, and she exploded. And that's kind of what got the bill to the floor, got it passed. Because at that time, George Brown, who was the AFL-CIO lead lobbyist, had been hired by this out-of-state can company or the union that worked for them to try to kill the bill. And George was a hell of a good guy, but he'd made a mistake of taking the job and so forth. And she got furious. It was a big blow-up in the past. Vic supported it, but wasn't right in the middle of it. Vic was always very suspicious of the land use. And I don't know how he voted on Senate Bill 100.
I think you voted for it.
I voted for 100 and bitterly opposed the other bill, which gave Metro the tri-county area. That was a concoction of Neil Goldschmidt, who said, we're all for land use planning, but we want Metro. Well, first of all, he wanted Portland to be excluded from Senate Bill 100, and the compromise was we'll put Metro in charge of the tri-county. And I remember saying on the floor of the House, the city that brought us beautiful 82nd Avenue is not going to do the planning for Hillsborough, Beaverton, and Lake Oswego.
Right.
Infuriated.
Well, that's actually why Vic was in favor of it, is because they used to have a farm, which is now a Fred Meyer, and then the boys moved up the hill into kind of Raleigh Hills.
Uh-huh.
And they watched this little two-lane road turn into Canyon Road. It basically is a four-lane highway with strip mines.
Right.
And that's, Vic said, we have to have land use planning. This is nuts.
So. The other bill you asked about was the beach bill.
Mm-hmm.
The beach bill, I don't think anybody can take credit for what happened. We knew the bill was there. It was an inconsequential bill that Glenn Jackson, the head of, at that time, the Highway Commission.
I used to go swimming at his house.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Okay.
He had a great
pool. He encouraged the bill, and the strangest people in the world that were supporting it were Sid Bassett from Grants Pass and Norm Howard from East Portland. They were the chair and the vice chair of the House Roads Committee or Transportation. Mm-hmm. Oh, screw it. Forget it, you guys. Mm-hmm. And then KGW. Whoever the general manager was, Armstead or something like that, went on the air one Sunday night with a tirade that ended by saying, call your legislator and demand House Bill 32 or 1560, whatever it was, no compromise. Mm-hmm. And our phones exploded. Mm-hmm. And we got calls and calls and calls. And Lee Johnson and I were out rooming together, the former attorney general. And Lee is called in by the speaker and said, look, we got to do something about this, and I got to get it out of Sid Bassett and Norm Howard. They can't handle it. Legally, they don't know what they're doing. Yeah. I'm going to form a special committee. It's going to be you and Jim Redden. And he put all the coastal legislators on it and some others, and we're going to work this out. And one night, and I never forget this, I'm sitting watching television in the apartment that we share, and the phone rings, and it's Lee, and he says, I got to get this committee the hell out of the Capitol. We can't get a fucking thing done. There's just people screaming and yelling and coming at us. So we adjourned the committee, and he brought them all over to the apartment and sat them down, and I got the lesson of my life in negotiation with guys screaming and swearing at it. It was Hanneman and Bill Holmstrom and a very powerful legislator from the southern Oregon coast all trying to oppose the bill because of their constituents.
Yeah.
And it's Redden and Lee Johnson working with the other people to get it. And I can still remember Rod McKenzie, who was a wonderful, brilliant Republican from Curry County, who disguised himself as a dumb sheep herder. He was the biggest sheep owner in the state of Oregon. But he said, I'm just a dumb sheep. And I'd say, fuck you, McKenzie. You know you're just lying to me on that.
Right.
He finally said, okay. And the argument was 6 feet above mean tide.
Yeah.
And Hanneman had a map, bless his soul, showed that 6 feet above mean tide would put it over Highway 101 in Girard,
the
low area of the northern coast. And they
refer to those as tsunami zones.
We were trying to get what they eventually got to. But it was the legal ability of Jim Redden and Lee Johnson to work out a sensible solution.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what passed the House. And John Burns will tell you that he was, and I can't deny this, very much involved in getting it passed in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Had to redefine some of the stuff to get it done in the Senate. John's a very close friend of mine, so I wouldn't doubt that.
Yeah.
Which is, by the way, the example of how closely we used to work together across party lines. John Burns and Jim Redden and all those guys. I mean, none of those things would have passed on a partisan vote.
Yeah.
It was totally bipartisan. I mean, the beach bill first in 67, and then the bottle bill in 71, it happened just that way.
Yeah. I heard a story a couple of weeks ago about Lee Johnson and Jim Redden co-writing their public statements for the meeting.
Oh.
And then they go out and yell at each other and then come back and they return. What can the solution be? How do we come to
Not only that, they sat next to each other. I was right behind them in the House.
Uh-huh.
And they would write out little attacks on each other and show it to them before they got up on the floor. I have to change that. Put this in here. Amazing. And Jim and Lee and Joan Redden would leave Salem in the car. They're going to a debate on television on the sales tax, for instance. they would drive up to Dunthorpe where Lee and Snooky Johnson would have a dinner, and they'd all have a couple of drinks and dinner, and then they'd go downtown and yell at each other in front of the television screen, come back, and they'd all, we'd all meet at Chuck's Steakhouse and sit down and laugh about what was going on. Mm-hmm. It was purely politics. They were personal friends, and I love to tell Redden, of course, you know, his favorite term when he was talking about his dastardly. What a dastardly thing to do. I can't believe what you're trying to do to the poor little people of Oregon with about the sales tax. Mm-hmm. I said 10 years later, guess who was supporting it? The Democrats. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you guys ever get together decades apart? We might have had a sales tax, but they didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, Wally Carson talks about going up to Olympia when he was in the Senate at one point, and everything was completely reversed of what the parties thought about sales tax and things. He said, I never knew the Columbia River was so powerful until I went.
That's exactly. Wally and I have talked about that because that was very true.
Yeah.
They were dead set trying to get an income tax and get rid of it and do something with the sales tax. And we're
exactly the opposite. Did you know when Vic decided to run in 74?
Pretty much, yeah.
The way he tells it is he, at some point, he looked at Tom McCall and said, you know, I can do that job.
Well, and so, you're talking about 74.
In 74, yeah.
I can't remember. I was busy trying to regain the House for the House Republicans. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was the nominal majority leader after Smith left. Hank Hard had been defeated. Smith left. Wally Carson left. And the majority leader, I was Speaker pro tem in the 71 session, but everybody else left. And I was just left for the job. And we were headed into a difficult election because of Nixon.
Yeah.
So I spent that whole campaign trying to win the House.
Yeah.
And didn't pay any attention to what Vic was doing. And 2 years later, we'd lost, and I was immersed in trying to figure out how to win it back.
Yeah.
Which we succeeded in doing 20 years later in the early 90s.
Yeah, exactly. So when do you decide that you're going to get in the 78 election?
It was a wonderful drunken dinner with all of my wonderful, very bright and very young staffers, including Walden.
Mm-hmm.
We're out at Italian restaurant on the west side of Salem, and we keep talking about it coming, and I finally said, I think I'm going to run.
Mm-hmm.
And they were encouraging me. They all wanted to be involved. Mark Cushing, who is now an attorney lobbyist and no friend of mine anymore, but was my chief of staff at the time. We all went. We went through all of this. Dave Dietz was very much involved. John McCulley, the Bob Moore's next brother down, were all part of my staff and all involved in. So I decided probably June.
Mm-hmm.
And we started to put our organization together, and I went on a big long road trip in a borrowed motorhome in August, all the way around the state, and that's kind of where I. But Vic was already in it because he'd run before.
Yeah.
The question was whether McCall would get in or not, and he wisely, from his standpoint, waited, and let us spend a lot of time going around. And then he jumps in November or something like that.
Yeah, changes all the dynamics. So when McCall got in, before McCall got in, how did you peg the race?
I had a long shot.
Mm-hmm.
I was probably a better public speaker at the time than Vic was.
Mm-hmm.
Vic had better name familiarity because he'd run 4 years before, and he'd been around a lot longer than I had.
Yeah.
I was one of the young hot shots that thought I could really overcome all the difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
And even when McCall got in, we still thought, my committee had put together the best statewide organization.
Yeah.
And that'll come up later when you're going to ask me about did you have a meeting.
The meeting, yes.
Yes, we had
exactly.
a meeting. I had a damn good organization put together. We had county chairman in every county. We had really active. I mean, I carried two counties that in no common sense should I have carried, including Josephine County, simply because of the people on the ground who were really organized.
Yeah.
That discards the metropolitan area where I was not as well organized and where all votes are.
Right.
Kind of what happened
yep.
when the basketball player ranted, spent all the last 2 weeks of his campaign.
I'm hoping I'll be able to talk to Chris, because I know that Vic talked to him. I think Chris was kind of the last credible candidate. Rob Cornelis never gelled. So.
That's right.
But I think Chris is the last credible candidate. And it's like, what on earth was he doing on a bus going across Central Oregon?
Everybody
it's
now
like,
says that.
Jesus.
It didn't make sense.
At the time, they were asking me on television, it's like, I don't know. There are no votes there, and he has them already. Go. But
well,
that's the decision.
Just to decide, a cute story that I love to tell about Vic is the last time he ever drank.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Two stories about this.
Yeah.
Sometime in the early 70s,
mm-hmm.
Vic and Dolores took a wine class from that guy out in Northwest who used to have wine classes. And it was back
mm-hmm.
when that was really a unique kind of thing to
yeah.
do. And Vic and Dolores had gone to the wine class.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in Washington, D.C. We're at a dinner hosted by some lobbyist. And among others, it's Bob Smith
mm-hmm.
and me without our wives,
mm-hmm.
and Vic and Dolores and Westerdahl and a couple other people. It's like eight people.
Mm-hmm.
And we're right in the Shoreham Hotel, right in the middle of a great big old-fashioned hotel restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And the wine connoisseur, whatever they call him,
yeah.
the guy all dressed up, looking ridiculous, had
yeah.
the taster hanging around
yeah.
his neck. He comes over and with the group like some wine. And Bob Smith has to say, well, we would, but this woman has just taken a class of wine, so let her pick the wines. And he hands the damn list to Dolores. Yes, she'd taken a class and decided she liked white wine, but she didn't know anything about it.
Right.
And she looks at it for a while, and then she's stumped, and she turns to Bob, and she says, what do you think? Well, for a red, I would suggest that Bojalis, that's a good wine. And for the white, and he makes up another Chablis.
Uh-huh.
And so the guy comes back, and she said, we'll have a bottle of Bojalis and one of Chablis. And the look on his face was priceless. Who were these rubes? I wish they had a camera. And I turned to Smith and said, you mean son of a bitch. And then he apologized to Dolores.
Uh-huh.
The other time, Pacific Power and Light used to take both parties on trips.
Mm-hmm.
Vic and I went on all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Twice we went to British Columbia to a fishing lake up there that Jack Lansing had
mm-hmm.
made contact with.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a harrowing experience because Lansing had one plane and his other pilot had another plane. These are two-engine Cessnas.
Yeah.
And they come in and they land on a gravel shore of a lake that's it's not flat, it's slightly like this. And I'm looking out the window, and these goddamn boulders are like that, they're landing on. And I'm thinking, if one of those flies up and hits that prop...
Yeah, we're done.
We're done. And as a matter of fact, they almost dumped. Lansing almost dumped it one time.
Mm-hmm.
And Smith intervened in some way.
Mm-hmm.
He'd forgot to pull the flap, do something with the mm-hmm. flaps. But on one of these trips, Vic, we get there about noon,
mm-hmm.
immediately put our gear away in the cabin we're staying in, and then we go down and put our fishing gear on and go out fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And the fishing is fabulous. You're catching Kamloops trout of this size and this size
mm-hmm.
almost on flies. So it's
mm-hmm.
a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
Well, what I didn't know is Vic and who's the state senator I mentioned?
Lynn Newbery. Yeah.
They're in one boat. And Vic has taken a bottle of bourbon with him to toast the river gods when they catch a
mm-hmm.
fish. Well, they catch so damn many fish that Lynn told me later, I wouldn't be able to run the boat if I kept keeping up with Vic. So he'd put his tongue in the mouth of the bottle and give it back to Vic. Vic drained almost an entire bottle of bourbon. And they don't come back for dinner. We all adjourned at mid-afternoon, came back for dinner,
mm-hmm.
and then went back out because you could fish until 10 o'clock at night. Well,
yeah.
we're going down at about 6 o'clock, and here they come up the lake, and the boat is literally going like this. And Vic is standing in front of us, go back, there aren't any fish left. And he's got a dishpan full of trout with the tails hanging over it,
uh-huh.
he's showing us. Well, and he's laughing and giggling, and they hit the shore. And he gets out, and he's still going like this as he tries to walk up to the cabin and immediately lies down. He doesn't eat dinner. Of course, he gets sick, throws everything up. He's throwing up.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start out, Dick Groner is there, and Groner says, why don't you try this Broma Seltzer? Mm-hmm. He gives him Broma Seltzer, and he takes that and throws it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say to him, well, try some Alka-Seltzer, and he takes mm-hmm. that, he throws it up.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day, he just doomed. That's the last time he ever drank.
Yeah.
And he said he had had that experience in college with gin,
uh-huh.
where two of them sat down drinking gin straight out of a bottle. He couldn't touch gin again.
Yeah.
And after that experience, he never drank anything.
Yeah. He describes the next day he did an oral history with the Reagan Historical Society in the early 90s.
Right.
He describes the next day as being sick as a dog and being really ticked off that you guys were all fishing.
That's right.
He couldn't
That's
go
exactly.
out.
He couldn't go out. By the way, you were able to pull his up. It wasn't ever published, was it? Or was it?
The Historical Society?
Yeah. Because I did mine verbally, too, but it's somewhere on record back. And mine... Mine's never been edited or anything else.
Oh yeah, no. This is it's raw, and we've got it. It's on our in our archive website, so you can go there and just look at the whole thing. I've got them all right here.
Does mine show up?
Well, I don't know. I haven't looked for any because I've got to find Norma's because she, like Jim Redden, is no longer able to really
right.
do things. So I haven't explored those yet, and I don't know if they're digitized.
I've been in charge, and Vic was very much a part of it until he died, a group called the Old Timers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's legislators, lobbyists, and people employed as staff in the legislature in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
And we meet four times a year for lunch, and it's absolutely a riot. It's totally bipartisan. We laugh at each other. And last time we met, which was in February, Norma told a funny joke. And did it well.
Good.
Had everybody laughing.
Good. That's great. That's very good.
Because she usually can't find her way there.
Yeah,
unless
exactly.
somebody brings her. And her son brought her.
Yeah. Yeah, I've talked to her daughter and her daughter-in-law. And the suggestion was that I read her oral stuff. And
uh-huh.
if I come up with questions, go ask her. So.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. We'll see. So, tell me about the meeting.
Well... probably early January at some time, I can remember this conversation. Mark Cushing says, you know, McCall's going to win this goddamn thing unless you can take at that point, he was at 45%.
Mm-hmm.
Vic was just under 20 and I was under 15
mm-hmm.
of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
With obviously a whole bunch of undecideds.
Yeah.
Or it wasn't straw. I mean, if you vote today, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And our pollster, and I was the first, this was Tim Hibbett's first statewide mm-hmm. poll. He was my pollster at the
mm-hmm.
time, and he was warning us, this is, you know, you got to do something. I don't want to get my story exactly straight. We also had pressure coming from a whole bunch of the AOIs and the industrial kind, the
mm-hmm.
business lobby, who were standing on the sideline. They didn't want McCall.
Yeah.
But they couldn't figure out what the alternative was, so they were kind of withholding everything. One of them was Doug Hyder,
mm-hmm.
Portland General Electric.
Mm-hmm.
He becomes a key. He was a friend of Vic's, better friend of Vic's than mine, but a
mm-hmm.
good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And he becomes key in this story. So finally the suggestion was made, let's talk to some of the bigwigs in the Republican Party or the people of the county.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was Hal Appling I talked to. And somehow out of that involved, would you be interested in kind of having a panel sit down
mm-hmm.
and decide which of you ought to drop out?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't know about that. We'll talk about it. And the meeting is arranged, and I can't remember exactly who arranged it, at a woman's house in Woodburn Estates.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time we both agree we're going to go there and meet, it's going to be totally secret.
Yeah.
And like we can keep a secret in politics. And she's going to put the coffee pot on, and we're going to meet there at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and
mm-hmm.
the door will be open, just go in.
Mm-hmm.
So I get there first, I go in, and sure enough, door's open, and there's nice coffee, she's got some cookies set out.
Mm-hmm.
And about 2 minutes later, Vic came up, and we had a nice little chat.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, you know, they want us to go sit down. It was going to be at the Equitable Building,
mm-hmm.
and it was going to include Jack Faust and John Mason.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Appling was part, I can't remember, there were a panel of three or five, and I can't remember. I could ask Faust and he could,
because mm-hmm.
he recollects all of this. And they start off by saying, okay, now here's what we're going to do. We're going to interview. First of all, they all say, you don't want to do this to you. We don't want to have to make a decision.
Right.
So why don't you decide? No, we won't decide. We don't want to do it. And this went back and forth for a few minutes. And finally, okay, we're going to start. And Vic, you're going to be the first up. And you sit here. And Roger's to go. Or maybe, no, I guess I went first. And Vic went in the library and sat there and talked to somebody else. I think Bill Lowe was sitting in there talking to me. And I went through my campaign and did a good job describing the campaign operation we had, the people in place in Klamath and Harney and everywhere else. And then I went to the library, and Vic went in for a half hour. And he did whatever he did. And then he came back. We both sat there as they discussed this for another 15, 20 minutes. They finally call us back and say that we don't want to do this. And we go through this whole routine again. And finally, no, come on. Because Vic is absolutely convinced that they're going to say, Vic, you ought to be in. Martin, you get out. They said the opposite. They said, Vic, I'm sorry to tell you this, but Roger's got a better campaign, we think. And he was flabbergasted. And, you know, the rest is kind of heat. He then denies there is such a meeting. It's on television that night. John Mason has gone home. And his daughter, he and his daughter are watching television. Vic stands there and says, no, we didn't have a meeting. And she explodes. She never talked to Vic and Tia again. It's fine. So Vic stays in. And the momentum. Then the only choice is somebody has to go after McCall.
Right.
Well, Vic is a Boy Scout and never says bad things about anybody. It's not going to be him. So at the University of Oregon, where all three of us were graduates, Tom McCall's a fraternity brother of mine, much older. We have this, and I prepared, because Vic's not going to do it, I'm prepared to attack McCall. And the opening, the line, my opening line was, I just want to be governor. I don't want to be king of the state of Oregon, hereditary title or something like one of my opponents. And he explodes. Just because we knew he'd do this. He couldn't control himself. He gets pissed as hell, makes some stupid comment. Everybody's aghast. I got booed for saying it, but, you know, the seed was planted. And Tim Hibbets will tell you, the polls immediately show him starting down, and we're coming up. And right at that point, Doug Hyder hires, who was the pollster, 30, 40 years ago now, whoever the pollster was, who was doing polling for everybody, in the, especially on the Republican side and the utilities. He's working for Portland General Electric, and he hires them to do a poll on the race, and it shows McCall has dropped to 34, 35. Vic has come to 24. I've come up to almost 20. And everybody plunged in the jumps on Vic's. He's the only hope. And it went from there. And I can remember driving up the freeway from someplace saying, well, and one of the guys saying, well, what are you going to do after this race is over? I think I'll be a lobbyist. And they were already making their plans. We, we knew it was over. Just a matter of the election. I will give Mark credit, Mark Cushing credit for one thing. That night, as soon as the polls started showing the trend, he said, come on, let's get in your car. We're going up to Vic's headquarters. And when the television, it's become obvious Vic is leading, he's going to win this. Just as they start, I walk in. And all the cameras get me, and I walk right over, grab his hand, put my arm around him, and said, Vic, I'm with you all the way. What can I do? Kind of flabbergasted Vic. Politically the smartest thing I could have done. And Vic was so enthusiastic about it. Me having said that, he gets in his car to go down and see McCall and runs into a drunk. He calls him all kinds of mean, nasty things and makes the utter fool out of himself that McCall could do on occasion. Now, having said all, were you invited to the McCall occasion next week?
Yes, I was. I'm going to be actually, I hope, talking to Bob Smith next week. I haven't heard back from him. If you talk to him, put a bug in his ear.
I will.
I'm going to call him when I get home today.
Understand, I think he is also suffering a little bit.
And that's
you want to get him
all
before
the
Marvels.
All the issue, I'm going to talk to, Roseburg guys, Norm Smith.
Right. Norm is
The guy.
Lucid.
I can look on my calendar.
Well, Sid Lycan is dead.
Sid Lycan. It's not Sid Lycan. It's Bill Markham.
Oh, Markham. He's, Markham is 97 years old.
Yeah.
Talk your leg off.
Yeah.
He's got all kinds of stories.
And as far as I can tell, he may be one of the key people in the kicker. So in just getting the idea going. So that, I don't know.
That's interesting, because I was never part of that kicker thing. Yeah. I was a no vote.
Yeah, Tony Van Vliet describes it as...
Oh, no, the 1979.
79, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I was out by then.
Yeah.
That was, Gary Wilhelms is the one you want to talk to.
I talked to Gary as well, yeah.
That was really Wilhelms and Bo's idea.
Yeah, but there's a sense that Markham and, I haven't taken it down, but another, like a Josephine County person, were the ones who brought it in, and then Bo especially becomes a crucial player in making that happen. So I hope to talk to Bob next week. But, you know, that's the nature.
I'll call.
That's the nature of these things. So when Vic becomes governor, you're a lobbyist now. So what do you see in his administration that's different or continuity? For instance, when he left office, he was really angry at Goldschmidt for basically firing people and throwing the suggestions out the window. Mm-hmm. When he came into office, he kept a lot of straw people. He listened to Bob, who said, this is how things run, that kind of thing. So,
if you want to talk to somebody that's totally lucid that remembers all of this, I'll think of it in a second. I go fishing with them all the time. Just a second. I got to look.
Okay.
He lives in Salem, and he left legislative fiscal at that point and became went into state government and served. He ended up finished his career as director of the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
He, along with a bunch of other people, will tell you that Vic is the best governor we ever had. Because he was accessible, and he was in Salem.
Mm-hmm.
He took the job seriously. Mm-hmm. Of course, he hires Thompson. Mm-hmm. He hired damn good people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first person he hired was Lee Johnson, which was kind of funny because he kept trying to hammer, telling Lee, you're not governor, I am. Because Lee was just kind of run off the bit.
Yeah.
I'll think of this in a second. This is what happens when I just turned 80.
Oh, yeah, no.
And although I have most of my marbles, the name thing, Dan Simmons. Dan Simmons is a extremely knowledgeable guy. And Dan Simmons' phone, he'd be happy to talk to.
Oh, I have his address, but I don't have his phone, so phone would be
his
good.
His cell phone is 569 4245, and his home phone is
363-2074. That's home.
That's home, and the other is the cell.
Okay.
And Dan, like a lot of people, will just tell you, it was so good to work for, because he listened. He'd have meetings in his office and really pay attention, ask questions. He got very involved. It's state government employees uniformly. High degree of respect for him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he really did stay there. I mean, Goldschmidt never stayed there.
Yeah.
None of the others. I don't know about Barbara Roberts, who I think was a disaster of a governor, which one we ever had, until Kitzhaber found a way to make a fool out of himself.
Well, the last time I talked to Vic was last June, and he had just been quoted in the paper about the story where Kitzhaber was living in Portland and not down there.
Right.
And Vic said, no, you have to live down there. And so I saw him maybe the next day or the day after. And he said, I should have been harder on him. So, yeah, but the idea of being there was so important.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Even though he feels he got screwed over in having to pay rent on a house that they raised the rent on.
Yeah, and he didn't have a real nice house compared to what the last three governors have had since Goldschmidt.
Yeah.
Vic was just, and he was totally accessible. I have a wonderful story that it's 1979. I'm now a lobbyist. Mm-hmm. I'm representing the Oregon Transit Association. I became the executive director of the Oregon Transit Association, so public bus systems.
Mm-hmm.
And Vic was absolutely the best governor that public transit ever had.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that came up with the payroll taxes being against public, private entities.
Yeah.
He levied it against public entities.
Mm-hmm.
Lynn Newbery, as his fiscal, put the first budget together,
mm-hmm.
put transit in there because it was obvious to Vic that, that things had to change. And
yeah.
it was just at the birth of light rail.
Right.
I mean, the other person you might want to talk to about this is Dick Feeney,
yeah.
who raves about how easy it was to work and how important he was to all
yeah.
of that. Most people don't appreciate that about Vic. I mean, it was, he understood the need to get something done.
Mm-hmm.
And to make things work,
yeah.
and he'd work at it.
Yeah.
Denny Miles was outstanding. You've, I'm sure, mm-hmm. talked to Denny. Denny, you know, he had really a good staff, just as McCall. And I mean, Vic was far better equipped to be governor than Tom McCall ever was.
Mm-hmm.
But both of them were excellent governors because of the staff people they had.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of chuckle at Vic talked about what a experienced business owner he was and so forth. You probably know his brothers really ran the rug business. He was a salesman.
Mm-hmm.
He was a downtown store
yeah.
glad-hander salesman, and he was very good at it.
Yeah.
But he wasn't running things. It was
yeah.
his twin brothers that were running the business. But, you know, and he, well, I don't have to tell you, he's the most genuine person I probably have ever met in politics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just,
mm-hmm.
he was always mild-mannered, always friendly,
mm-hmm.
always thoughtful,
mm-hmm.
even if he disagreed with you. And he didn't like the sales tax, and I got carried away in 1969 when we were trying to pass the sales tax. It was a special election, and
mm-hmm.
we lost 88 to 11 or something like that.
Exactly.
By the time the vote came, everybody in the world was against it.
Yeah.
There was one precinct that was one of mine right over on the other side of the lake that voted in favor of it.
Well, there you go. Yeah, because he eventually signs on to it in 85.
Yeah.
With, as part of a huge tax reform, and it, you know, as usual, just gets killed.
Uh-huh.
Just
well,
gets killed.
People always find some, it's so easy to be opposed to things.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always find some reason, even if it's totally out of context.
Yeah, yeah. Did you pay attention as he...
Oh, the other story I was
yeah,
going to tell
yeah.
you was... Vic is on, this is January or February of 1969,
mm-hmm.
and he's on an airplane
mm-hmm.
coming back from Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And on the plane, a guy gets on at the last minute, kind of running through the airport like O.J. Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
His coat's flying behind him, he runs on and they shut the door.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out of breath, and he's got the seat next to Vic.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes in and he sits down and he's breathing hard.
Mm-hmm.
And Vic said, "You seem to be in a hurry to get someplace." He says, "What's going on?" And the guy doesn't have any idea who he's sitting next to. He says, "Well, I got a problem out in Oregon, and my company's got a horrible problem, and I got to get out there."
Mm-hmm.
Well, he says, "Tell me about it." And he says, "I'm the governor." And of course, the guy says, "You're the governor of my ass." And he explains that he works for whichever the big Kimberly-Clark, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
who at the time were the largest manufacturer of disposable diapers, which were brand new.
Yeah.
And Mary Burroughs, state representative from Eugene,
mm-hmm.
had gotten out of her car at a parking lot of a restaurant and stepped right on a gooey,
yeah.
dirty diaper that some foolish mom had just dumped out of the car.
Yeah.
And she was so infuriated, "I'm going to ban those things."
Mm-hmm.
So she puts a bill in to ban them. Well, you know, you and I, in common sense, know probably not going to pass.
Mm-hmm.
Fit of emotion and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But the bill's in, and this guy's taking it dead seriously.
Yeah.
So after he tells his story to Vic, Vic says, "Well, I got a friend that's a lobbyist and you might want to talk to. His name is Roger Martin."
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is just after the election.
Yeah.
Guy says, "Well, thank you. I'll think about that." And he gets up to go get himself a drink in the back of the plane. Somehow he starts into the story again. And the guy standing there says, "Well, I know a guy by the name of Roger Martin, a lobbyist." And the guy says, "I can't believe this." Same plane and two guys have mentioned the name. He calls me up and hires me.
Yeah.
And the bill is dead within 36 hours
yeah.
because all you had to do was talk to the committee chair who happened to have small kids and say,
right.
"We're not going to do that."
Yeah.
And it was a Democrat
yeah.
from Bend who I didn't get along with on anything else.
Yeah.
He says, "Don't worry, Roger, that bill's not going anywhere."
Yeah.
Then the guy starts a whole series of, "Well, what if it passes out of the committee?" I said, "Then we'll kill it. How are we going to kill it on the floor? And what if it passes the floor of the House? It'll
mm-hmm.
go to the Senate, we'll kill it." He belt suspenders.
Mm-hmm.
Just goes on. I had a job the whole session, even though the bill was dead the first 2 weeks.
That's great.
Thanks to Vic.
Yeah.
I'll stop talking about extraneous stories.
No, those extraneous stories are great. Vic talks about economic development as an idea that he had, because when he becomes governor, land use is in place, but counties have not finished their plans, cities have not finished their plans, and so
some
basically
of, some
the first
still
2 years,
haven't.
Yeah, well, or they're inventing them in Damascus. So the first 2 years is holding people's feet to the fire, get this stuff
right.
done. But he sees this as, we've got to have this so that it's part of economic development. So there's certainty when businesses come in.
Right.
You know, there's not going to be litigation, all that kind of
mm-hmm.
stuff. And that's a continuum, even as the recession just slams everybody, all the way through his international trips.
Mm-hmm.
It's, what do we do to make it so that things are rational here, we're open for business in an Oregon way. So in your lobbying, what did you see of that, or was it apparent that's what he was doing?
I think it was apparent. I never had anybody that was directly involved in that. I represented at the time various businesses, United Grocers, who were already
mm-hmm.
here, and
mm-hmm.
grocery stores didn't have difficulty with land use.
Yeah.
I guess I can't really speak to that.
Okay.
It just wasn't something. We knew he was very pro-business.
Yeah.
And what really proved is everybody after that turned out to be a little less than that, some of them negative.
Yeah.
Now, I don't have any real insight on that.
Okay.
No.
What did you see with government when the recessions hit? The 79 session has been described as the apogee. Tax revenues are coming in. They come up with the kicker. They give hundreds of millions of dollars back to people. And then Paul Volcker, by the end of the year, says, you know, interest rates have got to go through the roof. And from then on, Vic is basically governing in
chaos,
and by 82 it's chaos and the timber industry is collapsing.
Right.
So what did you see of that?
Well, I was just one of those bemoaning it. I didn't, you know, I've always had the theory that the governor nor the president cause or cure the
mm-hmm.
business cycles. It's bigger than them, but
mm-hmm. which Kate Brown acknowledged in her
okay,
talk.
Kate Brown may say that, but but we sure like to blame Obama
yeah.
and so forth that
oh, yeah.
it goes sour, even though it started before
yeah.
he came in.
Yeah,
I don't think we're very realistic about it. And government has a much greater role today. I think a lot of us coming out had to do with the Fed and how they handle
mm-hmm.
interest rates. That had a great deal to do currently.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't that strong before. And it's always, Oregon always seems to be the first in and the last out of a recession.
Yeah.
Because it then was our lumber industry.
Yeah.
And of course, we didn't realize how badly we were getting killed by all the environmental restrictions that were going on.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I don't have a clear answer for you.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine. Does anything else jump out of him being governor?
I think he was universally well-liked.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats will tell you that. Democrats
mm-hmm.
that served at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Joyce Cohen, for instance,
mm-hmm.
thinks the world of Vicatea. She was a partisan, in my opinion, Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
But she was there all the time he was in.
Yeah.
She'd be an interesting one for you to talk to. Joyce Cohen.
Yeah, I think I've got something on her. But
she lives down in Northwest in a loft.
Joyce Cohen. Actually, I don't have any. I just have her name. I don't have a contact.
I don't know if I've ever written it down.
A lot of this is Denny Miles and Jerry Thompson just giving me names and what they have.
Right. Well, Joyce is part of this old timers group, and which I would love to invite you to either this June or in September to talk about the project.
Yeah.
They'd love to hear about this.
Oh, yeah.
And
no.
by June, will you have?
Oh, I've got plenty of stuff to talk
okay.
about right now.
Well, June 19th. It's Friday.
Okay.
It's at Oswego Lake Country Club.
Uh-huh.
And it is at 11:30. And you'll get a kick out of it because some of the real characters have died. Ed Whalen is about to die. He's
uh-huh.
the old labor guy and former Democratic state representative, president of the AFL-CIO, and then vice president of PGE in charge of their labor negotiations. A marvelous character, 90 years old and stopped eating about a week ago.
Oh, yeah. So 11:30, Lake Oswego Country Club.
Right. June 19th, Friday. And I will tell my cohort who does the that we will feature you as giving a little talk. But because they love to hear history of, especially of their era.
Oh yeah.
Now this has been members that were there in the 60s and 70s, and
yeah.
I came to the conclusion if we kept that up, we wouldn't have anybody to go to meetings. So we've opened it up to the early 80s.
Oh, now. Good. Which is now 30 years ago.
And,
so yeah.
Yeah, and Hardy Meyer is going to be a new member.
Oh, good.
Bob Shiprack.
Uh-huh.
A couple others I can't think of right now.
Yeah.
But it's a total cross-section. And it includes people that go back as far as Bob Smith, who has stopped coming as often because of the trip up from
Edmonton. Right, right.
But Bob Jones, who's a federal judge today and is 88 years old, he was elected with Vic in 1959.
Oh, my gosh.
You might want to talk to
I would love to talk to him. Yeah, because getting that era is tough.
He loves to talk about it, too. Bob Jones.
Let me just call this up here. Bob Jones.
Home phone, 636-2810. If you want to make an appointment, he'd love to meet you in his chambers.
Oh, great. And 28 is it 2810?
Yes, that's his home phone.
Yeah.
His office phone is 326-8340.
8340.
Now, he was elected with Vic from Washington County.
Oh, fantastic.
In that same 1959 class.
Yeah.
And he is still active, and his mind still works. And he can talk more than I can. So you be prepared for a long session. But he'll tell you all kinds of neat stories.
Yeah, because that early stuff, I'm not sure how important it's going to be, but it's a full... What I'm planning on doing is it's a huge thing on a website, and 300 pages becomes a book.
Okay.
So
right.
That's kind of how I envision this thing.
I got it. By the way, you're on sabbatical this...
I am.
...term this... semester.
Although I spent 10 hours at the university yesterday for Senior Projects Day.
My wife asked me, my wife has been urging me for years to go teach a class someplace.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably past the age where I could anymore, but she wanted me to ask you, is there any place where Roger Martin could come and tell you stories, students, stories about what goes on in politics or...
When I teach classes on elections and classes on community politics, there sure is.
Okay. Well, if you'd like it, I'd love to do it sometime.
Yeah. Last time I did my community politics class, I had everybody from Barbara Roberts, Kate Brown came as a sitting person, all the way down, you know, all sorts of, Andy Dyke came, Ben Unger came.
Okay.
And then people running for city council. So, yeah, you betcha.
Don't bill me anywhere near Unger. I can't stand that guy. You know, Unger's responsible for defeating a really quality legislator in state senator that got beat.
Oh, yeah.
Out in Hillsborough.
I just spaced on his name.
Star.
Yeah.
Bruce Star.
Bruce. Yeah, I was talking to...
And that's part of the story that hasn't totally come out. From Nigel in the Willamette Week. There's a tie that he hasn't uncovered yet. In the summer of 2012 or 13, the Kitzhaber and Cheryl, is that her name?
I just admit.
Whatever her name.
Yeah, whatever her name
goes to. They go to Vashon Island or an island in Puget Sound, and the billionaire from California. Who put the million
Steyer.
Dollars?
Yeah,
he's there.
Yeah,
and they become acquainted, and they personally go to him to solicit the money that went to the state senate caucus, $1 million,
right.
That defeated Bruce Starr and the woman from Albany.
Yeah,
and that's the payoff that passed the low carbon fuel
standard. Oh yeah, absolutely, there's no doubt about it. And we're now seeing if Michael Bloomberg's money can work on the gun. Yeah, I saw Bruce Starr. I was giving a talk to Ryan Deckert's business group.
Uh-huh, right.
And Bruce, they were going to honor Bruce at
OBA.
The end. And we were all behind schedule because they were talking about the low-carbon thing behind closed doors. Usually they agree on stuff, but this was not.
Well, they supported
so,
it nominally in the end.
But whenever it was, and so Bruce was there, and he was not a happy camper.
And he is so good at politics. He knew what was happening to him.
Yeah.
And he was desperately trying to raise money. But the machine that the unions have put together to turn out the vote
mm-hmm.
is almost unbeatable.
Yeah.
You know, former state senator from Yamhill County, father-son group. The younger one, who's now cornering the entire hazelnut market in the state of Oregon, and he retired.
Yeah.
He tested this 2 elections ago. He had his sister register as a Democrat
mm-hmm.
and not vote.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody came to their rural farm union mm-hmm. hired guy twice to mm-hmm. collect her ballot.
Yeah.
I mean, they zero in, and they are effective at doing it.
Yeah,
and we elect one of the dumbest state representatives or state senators we got now down there.
You know, he's a reliable vote.
Well, he's a reliable vote, but he didn't even know why he's there.
Yeah,
I mean, he is such a. The disparaging comments come from his fellow Democrats.
Oh yeah,
not just a Republican. This
Pacific's in the middle of his district.
He's
just a hoot. But this actually brings up an interesting thing in the 82 election. When Kulongoski looks hot and then Kulongoski gets creamed. When I talked to Ted, he said the best thing that's ever happened to him was Bill Sizemore. Because Sizemore lost by a bigger amount.
Right. Okay.
And in with politics in second place, no one cares. The person who's lost by the biggest amount.
I had the record for 20 years that the writer for the Salem Statesman used to bring up every damn election. I spent more money for fewer votes than anybody ever running for statewide office.
There you go.
And somebody beat me.
Somebody beat
within
you.
The last 10 years, and I don't have to listen to that anymore.
But talking to Ted, the 82 election, the unions were just kind of beginning. They weren't players.
Public employee, yeah.
Yeah. And so what he encountered is kind of what happened to Straub in 78. They're competing for the same money. So in 78, for instance, the timber money seemed to hold out because they were going to give money to whoever was going to go against McCall.
Right.
Then McCall gets beat and it goes to Vic instead of to Straub.
Right.
And Straub, the timber landowner, was ticked off about that. In 82, Ted's the same thing. He's competing with Vic for the same money. Did you see that kind of
I never
change?
Saw that. I just thought they put a strategy, Vic put a strategy together to tie him to that union. You had to, you couldn't close a plant.
Yeah, the plant closure bill.
The plant closure bill.
Right.
I mean, they wrapped that around his neck, and it was just at the time a lot of plants were closing.
Right.
And it became so preposterous, the idea that you'd actually go to somebody that's going bankrupt and require them to pay somebody for some long period of time.
Yeah.
It really didn't make any sense to even some of the union people.
Yeah.
And
Ted says Vic actually would go around and pat his pockets and saying, I have a list of the plans.
he played that brilliantly. And all of us knew, and I was the lobbyist at the time giving mm-hmm. money, all of us knew by early September that Kulongoski was cooked, gone, and the interest shifted to other races.
Yeah.
Legislative and so on. I can't remember who was running at the time, but I mean, he just was shot.
Yeah.
Plus, it was. It was Vic's nice personality that helped him in that time. He was not a firebrand.
Right.
If I were in that same position, they would have been ready to throw me out of office.
Yeah.
And there would be no Democrat saying nice things about me. He was able to do that. And what's the name of the guy that ran? He was a former Republican state chair. He's running for governor in the coming year. Right here
Alan
Alley.
Yeah.
I would suggest to you that Alan Alley is the Vic Attia of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
He has got a plan, I've heard him talk about this, of quietly going about appealing to Democrats by being a nice guy
mm-hmm.
with sensible common sense, get everybody back to work ideas
mm-hmm.
and not attacking mm-hmm. anybody in particular.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure Kate Brown's going to come out of this looking like a strong leader.
No. But
we don't know.
It's open. She drew a line in the sand on transportation, and so I think that's where she's going to live or die. We'll see.
Right now, unless a Republican caves, she ain't going to get it done.
Yeah.
Now, quietly, I happen to be entirely in favor of a gas tax that mm-hmm. increase for trans, and I don't have any, I used to have, I don't have any transportation clients left.
Yeah.
But I drive our roads and they're going to hell in a handbasket. Yeah. And we desperately need an increase in the gas tax, weight mile tax, mm-hmm. vehicle costs, mm-hmm. or we ought to be smart and shift totally to a mileage fee.
Right.
With transponders.
Right.
You ought to see the crazy emails that are going around screaming about how what a communist plot that is.
Yep.
But I've asked a couple of Republicans, can you really go home without doing something about it? This is awful tough. They quietly will admit it's tough not to ignore that and stand on that principle.
Yeah.
Now, at the same time, there's all kinds of things going on about the carbon thing, you know. There's going to be a major referendum effort, and they're toying with two or three different versions. They're going to do some polling.
Right.
Whatever they come back with is going to be well thought out.
Yeah.
I don't have anything to do with it, but I just know what's going on.
Yeah.
And if it looks like a major effort, maybe they'll reconsider. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think the way Oregon voters as a state go, that the carbon, repealing the carbon, is going to be a tough sell.
Maybe.
I think it's
going
to
be
a real tough sell.
It may well be. Even though if they ought to know what it reminds me of, do you remember the name Walt Brown,
mm-hmm.
who was a state senator,
mm-hmm.
nerd of all time from right here? I had to put up with him as legislator. He introduced a bill sometime in the 70s. To put a limit on how many children you could have to help the world's population problem.
Right.
And everybody said, it's China. It's not Oregon, it's China. You
mm-hmm.
can stop births in Oregon. You're not going to affect what's happening worldwide.
Yeah.
And of course, Bill didn't get a hearing, but it was
yeah.
that. Well, the idea that we're going to solve the carbon problems of the world by reducing our already relatively low carbon output in Oregon is just
mm-hmm.
insane.
Yeah.
But what it will do, because the Oregon Environmental Council is responsible personally. I can prove this one. They killed the last refinery ever considered in Oregon, 1971.
Mm-hmm.
Port of Portland had a good working possibility of getting a refinery out of the mouth of Columbia, the mouth of the Lima, the Columbia.
Yeah.
And the Oregon Environmental Council went berserk and killed it. Now that's, you know, and we are
yeah.
dependent totally on oil from California and Washington.
Yeah.
And we always pay, we're always the first one to have a price increase and the last one to have a price decrease.
Exactly.
And don't kid me that if we have to go to the California's fuel standards, you know, refinement,
mm-hmm.
gas is going to cost a hell of a lot more than it does right now.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So talk about Vic as an ex-governor.
Vic is an ex-governor, tremendously effective being for the Republicans,
mm-hmm.
the hero, and
mm-hmm.
the longer he lived, the bigger a hero he came.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I will tell you that as governor, my wife was the president of Dorchester the
mm-hmm.
1 year they moved it to Bend,
mm-hmm.
and she got Vic Atiyah to put a costume on and be in the tent show and dress like the devil running down the aisle, and he tripped and fell over, and everybody loved it. He was so embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
To even think of doing it. She talked him in it. Everybody loved it. Thought,
mm-hmm.
there's a human being.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy willing to be funny.
Yeah.
Willing to fall down in front of people.
Yeah.
And he realized later that was one of the smartest things he ever did.
Yeah.
And he was the darling of Dorchester. He'd always come down, everybody cheered and shouted.
Mm-hmm.
But he truly was the last really accessible governor. I have been in the governor's office as a lobbyist
mm-hmm.
full time. Once since Vic left.
Wow.
And it was to be called in and have my ass chewed out by Goldschmidt for
huh.
suggesting something.
Huh.
Now, I was there several times in Kitzhaber's first term, didn't get any further than Wyatt's office.
Right.
But,
right.
you know, so
yeah.
I'd love, again, once in my lifetime, to be a Republican governor and just go in and look around.
By
that time, of course, they will close the Capitol for 2 years,
yeah.
for two sessions.
Yeah.
The 2017 and 19 sessions will be held in the old PUC building.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they went through in Washington when they, well, had the earthquake that kind of made it so they couldn't go in. But, yeah. Yeah. Great. So, this is wonderful.
Well, I can't tell you how uniformly how well-liked Vic has always been. And the longer, and now that he's dead, we eulogize him all the time.
Yeah.
Because he was a fun guy to be around.
Yeah.
He had a wonderful sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And he would start telling a joke and start laughing before he got the punchline, so you never quite got the whole joke because he was giggling to himself.
Barbara Roberts tells about sitting at Frank's desk and always knowing where Vic was because he never sat at his desk.
Uh-huh.
Standing in the back. But he'd just be standing back there giggling.
Uh-huh.
Because he'd tell a joke and stumble over it and just laugh at that. And, yeah.
Have you talked to John Burns about him, by the way? I would suggest you want to... Burns is, in himself, a marvelous storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got all kinds of stories that he can relate to you. His cell phone... I had my granddaughter put this together, and she did it ass backwards. His cell phone is 503-799-2526. And he usually answers it.
Okay.
He spends most of his time running a gigantic, successful cattle ranch in Condon.
Oh, great.
He secretly is one of the most successful guys ever out of the legislature because he was the presiding or the head managing partner, Miller Nash, for
mm-hmm.
5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
When he retired, went over to his cattle ranch where he originally came from. He's originally from Condon.
Huh.
He moved to Portland as a young man after graduating Notre Dame. He's in himself a genius politician.
Mm-hmm.
And he can tell you, it would be interesting just to interview him about the takeover by his switch in 1971 that put him president of the Senate
mm-hmm.
instead of former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. I can't think of his name right now. Who was... That's the one that lasted for like 7 to 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate tied up in a knot
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
without it being able to settle anything. And I happened to be standing in the back of the House, back of the Senate, because the House was organized. We couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
And I was standing there when they took the 16th or 17th or 70th vote or something.
Mm-hmm.
And John Burns stood up and said, on the next ballot, I will be voting for myself. And the place dissolved, going in a bunch of directions because it was a signal. He'd cut a deal with the Republicans and with Debs Potts and Harry Boivin
mm-hmm.
in Klamath Falls, and together with the 13 Republicans they were then mm-hmm. electing. And I just stepped back into the phone booth, put the phone up, and called KEX,
mm-hmm.
Jim Howe.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "You want a break?" I says, "I can, you know, go live right here from the back of the Senate and tell you what's going on." And he put live on the air.
Yeah.
It was the first station to come out with what was going on. He just died.
Yeah, he just died.
Okay.
Good. Thank you very much.
I'll rope you in on my project.